Hi, this is Kurt, and you're about to hear Sideshow, Studio 360's great new spin-off podcast about pop culture and the most interesting stuff on the internet. You can find out more at pri.org/sideshow, and you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or any other player of podcasts. Thanks.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
This is Sideshow, a podcast from Studio 360. I'm Sean Ramisferm. If you're an illustrator, landing the cover of The New Yorker is kind of the brass ring. Christoph Niemann has done that almost 20 times. He might even be responsible for some of your favorites, if you're into that sort of thing. One of his best came after the Fukushima disaster in the spring of 2011. He drew a blossoming cherry tree, but replaced its flowers with pink nuclear radiation symbols. He's also responsible for a bunch of kids' books, the kind that adults without any kids own. iLego New York might be the best known. It's a collection of New York City landmarks and cultural references recreated really simply with Lego and funny handwritten captions. Christoph is already as established as any visual artist could hope to be, but the internet is helping him do everything he does better.
The one amazing advantage of the internet is you have more space. In print, you can't just go to an editor and say, like, please give me like 15 spreads. I have this really great story to tell. In the internet, it doesn't really matter. Like, you come to them and say, like, here's like 100 drawings. And they go like, glad, let's do 100 drawings. It's perfectly fine.
The internet has made Christoph a full-on storyteller. He tells them with animation, with Instagram, with GIFs, photos, videos, and souped-up slideshows. All the elements he uses have existed for a while, but he's throwing them together in a way we haven't seen. Stuff he could only dream of doing when he was starting out as an illustrator.
Even if I would have had the technical abilities, I couldn't have done it alone. 20 years ago, a lot of the projects that I do by myself now in a week would have probably cost $50,000 and a team of 20 experts.
One of these more ambitious projects was Christoph's coverage of this summer's World Cup. His pitch to the New York Times is the kind of pitch only someone as good as he is could make.
I would really love to go to Brazil and do something about the World Cup. Will you please pay for my trip and trust me that something will come out at the end that will be intriguing, and I have absolutely no idea what that could be.
Really? And they said yes to that?
Yes.
And of course, he pulled it off. For my money, he produced the most inspired coverage of the entire tournament. It was called My Travels with the Curse of Maracana. It's about Brazil's brutal World Cup loss at home in 1950. Maracana is the name of the stadium where it happened. Brazilians say the goaltender who let the deciding goal in cursed the country, and they were all hoping that 2014 would be the year they laid the curse to rest. The presentation is beautiful and simple. It's a slideshow of photos, videos, text, and animation set to music. And Christoph sketches himself into nearly every slide with bold black ink.
I often bring myself in there because I'm not the expert, I'm the viewer. So I go to Brazil, I try to find the spirit of soccer. And then I think about losing. Because ultimately the World Cup is about losing. And as I'm thinking about losing, people tell me about the curse. I learn about the curse in this terrible game of 1950. I've turned this curse into a person, and the curse is like this big, hairy monster in a soccer outfit, kind of like the picture book curse, but he turns out to be quite a friendly chap, and then we kind of have this buddy movie scene where we walk around Rio, and he shows me the sights, and we're having fun. And there's like these two ladies, or like kind of like my favorite coconut sales lady who I befriended, who then grabs the curse and kind of like, in order to kind of like show what Brazil will do, kind of like stuffs the curse back into kind of like the coconut card. And so I'm by myself, I'm like heading to the airport, and I just want to do something to redeem this poor goalie. So I, and this is something I did live, I took a coconut to like one of these sports fields by the beach there, and I kick a penalty onto an empty goal with the coconut, and I miss the goal. And then you see the coconut in slow motion kind of rolling right off the goalpost, and my attempt to make this goal undone.
The piece doesn't look that complicated, but that's by design. It took months to make, and the New York Times had never really done anything like it. But luckily, everyone really liked it.
what made me probably like the happiest is that whenever you do a piece of storytelling like this, you always bank on the visual savviness of the readers. And not so much in a sense that I'm so smart and you need to be smart to get this, but it's more, this is a language that I'm speaking, and where kind of like my discussions with editors and with everybody is always like, will people get that? Will they get references even if you don't spell everything out, and without always repeating in writing what we're saying in images? By getting this reception, it was just like the vindication that this whole world that's being presented on Tumblr, on Instagram, this is for real. And people, I think they were always visually savvy, or visually much more literate than you would think. And now with these pieces, you can really use this literacy, this visual literacy of people to tell stories. And when it works, and when you get the reaction from people, and you, based on the reactions, you realize they really understood this.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned Instagram, because next to a few family members and close friends, you're my favorite person on there.
Well, this is a great compliment, especially since this is such a new universe for me.
Yeah. So you just joined recently, I think like late last year. Can I ask what made you sign up?
I guess it was one of these evenings where you shouldn't be on the internet, but then you click yourself through more and more things. And eventually I ended up on Instagram, and I just realized it is a medium that really is made for me, because it's communication through images only.
And so has it changed the way you create work in any way, or is it just, you know, another outlet for you to share the things that you're already doing?
It has changed my work, because I really try to think about doing things not as curated as I would do them for print or for other mediums. I really want to have that thing straight from the sketchbook, so like no Photoshop or not too much finessing around.
Something you do so well in the Curse of Maracana, and even on Instagram, is totally change the context of an image by manipulating and sketching on top of it or around it. You recently posted, I think, an image of a skyscraper. I think it's in Brazil. It's this all glass skyscraper, and you've just sketched a bunch of open windows on it, which is it's a quick doodle and it's very simple, but it also carries a much deeper message, I think. Is this something that you've always done, that you get a kick out of, turning context on its head?
Well, it's something that I've definitely always thought about. But again, this is not so much me kind of like doing a piece of theater, but it's almost that the image itself just tells the reader, okay, here's an image, and you've seen kind of 20, 50, 100 that were more or less exactly like this. And now I'm just turning on this one little switch, and that will kind of revert the meaning or push the meaning in a new direction. And I think that this is like my most important asset is what people already know. It's like their cultural knowledge, their visual knowledge.
Do you think you have an advantage over other traditional magazine illustrators because you're so tech savvy?
Well, I definitely think it helps, because I can play around with stuff without having to ask people first. And so much about this process is, it's like the process of drawings. You create, you judge, you create, you judge. And this is actually when you think of that, you draw a quick circle line or with a ballpoint pen, you're trying to find a shape. And it's like, it's this fluid motion of creating and judging or evaluating. And if I would have to send every pencil sketch to a producer and they print it out and then bring it back to me 5 minutes later, I couldn't draw.
Right.
And when you work with images, with interactive stuff, that's usually the big problem, that you go, oh, it doesn't look right red. I'm going to call somebody. Please make it green. Half an hour later, I have it green. But, no, green still doesn't work. And so this draws this process into infinity and makes it impossible to really get into a flow. And kind of, that's why I think you have to, like in this world, in this kind of tech interactive world, you have to a degree speak the language.
And as someone who works with, you know, all sorts of platforms and programs, I'm going to ask you if you have a favorite kind of file, a favorite file extension.
At this point, it's a really bland one, but the PDF has solved so many problems, because the fate of an artist is you have to share your stuff with non-artists. Non-artists often work on machines that don't read all these beautiful file formats that I have. And the moment you put something in a PDF, it works everywhere. And it definitely has saved me a couple of years of my life of desperation.
mine's .gif. And this summer you made maybe the most profound GIF I've ever seen. Could you tell us about the GIFs you made while you were on vacation this summer?
Well, I was on vacation. It was a fantastic vacation. It was what I felt was a very well-deserved vacation. I was really completely wiped before. And we're on the beach. The kids are happy in the water. I finally have the time to get a real physical newspaper. And it felt like the moment we kind of went on vacation, the whole world started going mad. It was the moment where the situation in Ukraine got out of hand with when the flight was shut down. Mm-hmm. Gaza was completely out of control. And as if that wasn't enough, the whole ISIS thing in Iraq was starting. And you go like, wait a minute, like one is too many. Two is just more than you can handle. And it was almost like the newscaster were like embarrassing. He said, oh, we have this third thing going on. We're really sorry. We have to talk about this too. And so there's this moment where I'm sitting there eating nice food, building sandcastles with my kid. And at the same time, you think, you should not be enjoying any of this. This is absolutely wrong, which of course you could always feel. There's always like enough terrible stuff going on in the world. But in this case, it was all stuff that I thought we had resolved 500 years ago. And then I wanted to create an image. I had this feeling of this image of like me sitting there in this beautiful, perfect world. And on the other hand, everything being terrible. And so I drew myself standing in the water reading a newspaper, which for me is like the ultimate moment of relaxation and happiness. And then you just have a very subtle drop of blood coming out of the newspaper, going into water, and then also dissolving. Like the next moment, it's gone, but there's another one and there's another one. That's the beauty of these animated GIFs, that they're this endless loop.
What's so brilliant about it is that it starts as just this familiar scene. It's a man reading a newspaper on the beach and the water is just having these very soft ripples. And it's very pleasant to look at. And then 2 or 3 seconds into the GIF, which might be as long as someone even looks at a GIF, a few drops of blood slowly fall out of the newspaper. And then it completely, again, changes the context of what you're looking at. Did you want to make sure that you had to wait for that sort of reveal?
Absolutely. There's two things that I think are crucial to the storytelling of that piece. The one is that you really at the beginning are completely at ease and go, oh, this is kind of pretty and I would like to be there. And the second aspect that I thought was very important was that this violence, and of course the blood stands for the most unspeakable things that human beings are capable of, but that it's still quiet. And it's just there, and it's a presence, and it doesn't harm you. There's not an explosion going on in the newspaper. There's no kind of like sabers and machine guns and grenades going off. But it's just like this thing where you kind of like look down and go like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, this is wrong. And the next moment, it's gone, and you feel like, oh, everything's fine. So this quietness is something that I always think is a much more powerful tool than being graphic.
When I look at a lot of your work, I feel like you're just creating stuff when you feel inspired. Is that the case?
It's the absolute 180 degree opposite. It's
so you're just doing stuff all the time because you have to.
The way I work, like the simplicity that I try to create is often like dealing with like a very complex set of issues. And I try to take away elements until I kind of reveal the essence of that issue. And this is a long process. So ideally, the end result feels like this thought, but it's really more like one thought after kind of removing all the 999 other thoughts around it. And then, of course, you spend another like 5 hours to draw it in a way that it feels like you just took a pencil on a piece of paper and just like threw that down. I like the outcome often, or like the feeling of having something presentable so much that I gladly kind of accept the agony.
Thanks for listening to Sideshow. You can find tons of Christoph's stuff at pri.org/soundworks. He's on Instagram at Abstract Sunday, and Abstract Sunday is the name of his New York Times blog where you can watch my travels with the Curse of Marikana. Thanks to Kathy Merritt, who I should have been thanking since podcast number one. Thanks to David and Jenny, who I have been thanking since podcast number one. And thanks to Scott Ross for tagging along on this one.
Sideshow is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
See you later.